Please stand by. Welcome and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Kick Your FTP Habit, Making ZOS File Transfer More Reliable and Secure. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how the IBM File Transfer solution can help by centralizing file transport management and administration, collecting and displaying comprehensive audit trails, going into production quickly as a zero programming solution, and adapting batch processes to the real-time world. The speaker for today's teleconference is Ben Mann, WebSphere MQ Product Manager. And as a final note, today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our speaker, Ben Mann. Please go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you for joining me today at this webcast looking at managing ZOS file transfers and making them more reliable with WebSphere MQ and PM for Data. My name is Ben Mann. I'm the Worldwide Product Manager, and I'm very excited to share with you this opportunity to reduce IT costs and increase the reliability of information moving throughout your enterprise. So moving to slide two, the business pressures that may be affecting you today in the IT department of an organization are often tightly linked to business initiatives and pressures from without the organization. For example, many companies across industries and geographies are faced with an increased challenge and burden of regulatory compliance. How can they meet ever stronger audit obligations as the hurdle gets higher and higher to respond to requirements to demonstrate that business data is being moved around the organization in a very auditable, trackable way, manageable way? In terms of integration, how can you make the most of tomorrow's innovations and the promise of new technologies and the things they can deliver, the new business function that can be developed, whilst at the same time preserving the investments that are already in place, the systems that businesses bet itself on, and extend the return on investment of those existing assets and use them in combination with new technologies? And from a security perspective, security is an increased concern across all industries. How can you protect business data that you have from misuse, from theft, from any other kind of attack and risk? And all those business pressures that you have incumbent upon you in the IT department also coexist alongside the ever-present IT issues. How can you manage your IT costs? But much more than that, how can you, as well as just reducing costs, change the perception of the role of your department within the organization to being not just a cost center, but something that really generates value for the business that really has an effect on the bottom line of the organization? And then as more business pressures come in, the need to change IT systems, to adapt IT systems, respond to acquisitions, to market forces, how can you make adjustments to the IT infrastructure and have a flexible infrastructure that can help support that change? And from a skills acquisition and growth perspective, how can you make sure that you have the right IT skills in your department and make sure that you're not creating too much of a dependency on very rare skills that might be difficult to replace, might be difficult to retain? Well, as a whole, many of these problems today, the solution that the industry is looking towards is service-oriented architecture. How to compose the assets within your IT infrastructure into services so that they can be more readily integrated, managed, and changed within your organization. Moving to slide three, what really is the key to addressing many of those concerns that we just looked at? And really, the fundamental key, the question to perhaps ask yourself in this presentation is, how are you moving data around your organization? Because many of the things we just looked at, regulatory compliance, integration, security, the IT skills that you have, it's the flexibility of IT infrastructure, all depends on the answer to that question. And you can see a couple of quotes here from an analyst report that was conducted recently and also updated, which looked at how organizations were doing it. And for the most part, the report really highlighted that in-house solutions, custom-built solutions developed from the very ground up, using perhaps low-level IT languages and technologies, were the bulk of the technologies and approaches used to move data around the organization. And this report really exposed that a lot more of this is taking place than many people thought. And as a result, it can lead to much higher costs because of the custom coding, that because the logic is buried deep within applications, the solutions can be fragile. Security often becomes an afterthought to the solution. And so how secure end-to-end is the solution in operation? And so many IT organizations find themselves locked in to a cycle of ongoing maintenance of the existing solutions that they have. Moving on to slide four, you can see an example of how this looks within one of IBM's clients, obviously before the adoption of SOA and integration principles. And you can see a common picture that perhaps you might recognize of a sort of Frankenstein's IT system. It's grown incrementally over time as more applications have been added in, more interfaces to other applications have to be built. Those interfaces are spread across the portfolio of applications, and so a rat's nest of linkages are built between those applications, making the whole solution much more complex. And as changes need to be made to that IT solution, it becomes increasingly more risky, more time-consuming, and more expensive to make those changes. It can be harder to track when things have gone wrong, harder to detect problems that take place or diagnose the problems in the linkages between those applications. So let's look at a way that many of these problems can be solved on the ZOS platform. Well, firstly, on slide 5, the ZOS platform benefits from an inbuilt service called the Communication Server for ZOS. And amongst many of the utilities that Communication Server for ZOS provides is its first-class support for file transfer protocol. This is the technology that's very popular for moving data between IT systems. And the Communication Server for ZOS is ideal for connecting FTP client technology into the SystemZ platform. It provides a great way of moving data, moving file data in particular, from a central hub out to clients or from clients into that central ZOS platform. So it's a really good solution for file transfer into the ZOS environment. But if you look at the right-hand side of this diagram, increasingly there's a need to move files and track files end-to-end across the organization. And that will invariably involve other IT platforms, distributed platforms, also engaged in this movement of data, this movement of files between platforms. And whilst Communication Server for ZOS provides really best-of-breed support for the file transfer protocol and augments that protocol with additional security and reliability characteristics and capabilities, across the distributed platforms, often those qualities of service are not available. And so the problem becomes, how can you track a file that's arrived at a machine and know where it came from originally, the route it took through the network to get here, whether changes have been made to it, whether the file has been received in a secure manner, whether the entire contents of the file have been received, or whether there's a dependency on another piece of data involved. So the challenge really becomes end-to-end tracking of files. And obviously, a Communication Server for ZOS can provide FTP technology, but across a distributed solution, it can be very hard to extend that quality of service out to all those other platforms. And that's really what we're going to focus on here, is not simply how we can make file transfer more reliable on the ZOS platform, but how can we have that quality of service right across a distributed environment. So let's move to slide 6 and some more insights from this analyst report that was conducted. What you can see is, apart from the fact of just pointing out that FTP usage and custom coding usage is widespread across all IT platforms, what it really pointed out was the cost savings compared with building this stuff and rolling it from scratch. And you can see this diagram shows that essentially the more integration solutions are based on hand coding and low-level FTP technologies like free FTP technologies, the higher the cost of building the solution and the higher the cost of maintaining it. On the other hand, using integration technologies that enable you to get that end-to-end tracking and end-to-end delivery can reduce the costs of an integration solution. So whilst FTP is still useful and has its place, when integrating applications together, really integration software not only reduces the cost of building the solution in the first place, but can have the same amount of cost savings in ongoing maintenance. And that's important because it can help free the IT department from this burden of ongoing maintenance to actually investing in more value-added projects. Moving on to slide 7, if you're not sure how widespread FTP-based homegrown projects are across the range of platforms within your IT organization, it might be worth just taking the time to do a survey, ask around, see who owns the different systems within your environment, think about how they're connected together, and talk to the different IT departments to see just how much data movement across IT systems is dependent on these kinds of homegrown FTP-based technologies. You may be surprised at just finding how widespread the usage is, and you also might be surprised at the quality of service that you're getting on those distributed platforms. And whilst on the ZOS platform, the Communication Server for ZOS will provide you with a high quality of service, once those files get to the distributed world, well, really, you're at the mercy of the FTP software that's being used. And in many cases, what this report is showing is that the bulk of it is free FTP software. It's really the common denominator that can really have an impact on those things we looked at earlier, security, regulatory compliance, and the flexibility of the solution. So let's look at some of the shortcomings of FTP tools on slide 5. And this is really focused not on the ZOS platform, where we have communication server, but on distributed platforms, and looking at the quality of service that is often available here. To start with, many particularly free FTP tools provide a very inflexible way of moving data. For example, it's not always possible halfway through a very large transfer to pause that transfer, do some other work, and come back to it. It can be very difficult to restart transfers, and many customers that we've spoken to find that if a batch fails right at the last transfer step, everything has to be resent, even though the bulk of data has already been transferred. And that can clearly take a lot of time, and it can really shorten the window of time available to moving all of these transfers. Often, distributed FTP technology requires all the applications to be available at the same time. And what that means is that the sending and receiving applications have to be ready to process that information. At the same time as well, being able to simultaneously send different file data from the same application is often not supported. And so what has to happen is multiple sessions have to be started at the same time. And this can cause lots of problems when it comes to ensuring that a file data has all been received in a consistent manner. And at the same time, file transfer technology tends to be one single priority. If you're halfway through moving a lot of low-priority data across the network, it is often not possible to pick out a file and say, actually, this file is much, much higher priority. Send this one immediately and then resume the low-level, large batches of data that's being sent. So obviously you can see scenarios where that kind of transfer may be important to the business. In terms of security and the risks imposed upon the data, often the free FTP technology that's ubiquitous and used today doesn't have support for some of the added value FTP protocol standards around security, and so things like username and passwords can even be sent as plain text. No support for encrypting that information, and higher value security concepts like non-repudiation and privacy are often lacking from these kinds of FTP tools. Now, in terms of visibility and traceability, being able to track from end to end where the file has come from is often impossible. These FTP technologies tend to be a single hop across the network from client to server. And so if the file is moved from one part of the organization across to another part of the organization, it can be impossible to correlate those files and see the end-to-end path, the end-to-end route that file has taken across the organization. And as a result of that, it can be hard to audit the data movement. It can be difficult to prove that the file, as it moved across those IT systems, hasn't been changed or hasn't been tampered with. And so it can be very hard to produce reports that demonstrate that an organization knows where its files were and where they've been moved. In terms of data integrity, obviously there are FTP technologies that have been augmented with tools and with functionality to improve data integrity. But the lowest common denominator often tends to be FTP technologies that can result in partial files being dispatched. And the problem here isn't so much that occasionally the whole file isn't received at the application end. If it's possible to detect that that's happened, clearly the file can be resent. But the problem is often it is hard to detect the whole file hasn't arrived. Checksum technologies can be used, obviously. But fundamentally, the transport layer itself doesn't necessarily provide that protection. And so you can end up processing a partial file. And if you can imagine, that partial file is a customer order. You may find that you fulfill only part of that customer's order, and perhaps they're unsatisfied with the business they've received from you. In terms of losing files and file corruption, the popular FTP technologies are not transactional in nature, and so as a result of that, again, it is possible for file transfers not to be completely sent and received. And as I said earlier, the key problem here is not necessarily the reliability of the transport, but the ability for the business to detect that's happened and take corrective steps to fix that. And as I said earlier, a lot of those capabilities and these problems are overcome by communication server for ZOS. However, what we're looking at here really is what happens when those files are sent across the enterprise to other platforms, to other environments. How do we overcome those problems? Looking on at chart 9, this just makes the linkage, the tie-in between the regulatory compliance I mentioned at the beginning and this problem of data movement, just to make this relationship a little bit clearer. in many cases, regulatory compliance is aimed at the financial part of an organization. And in addition, much of regulatory compliance today originated in financial-oriented industries, and also healthcare. What you can see is that most of these regulatory compliance initiatives require that an organization demonstrate that financial reports are accurate and up-to-date. How does that tie in with IT? Well, in the case of things like Sarbanes-Oxley in America and MiFID in Europe, it's really about attesting to the fact that business data that these financial reports are based on hasn't been tampered with, that the applications are reconciled, that the data is sent with integrity. So that by looking at reports of transactions from these applications, we can sign up and say that this data is accurate, that the financial reports based on it are up to date, and in many cases, because of the severity of the penalties involved, often, you know, the organization can suffer either directly or indirectly through fines or through market valuation. And even the C-level executives of an organization may have to personally attest to this, which means that they become personally liable if they fail an audit. Imprisonment and fines and all kinds of things could result from that. But how all that ties into the problem we've been looking at is, if it's not possible to provide an audit trail of data movement from end to end, especially that data that is being used to produce financial reports, such as financial transactions, and if it's not possible to demonstrate that none of that data has been lost, has been tampered with, has been partially received, that those applications are not in an unreconciled position, if none of that is possible, then how can an organization expect to be able to say its financial data, based on that information, its financial reports, are accurate and up to date? And if an organization is not in a position to be comfortable with that, then how prepared could it really be for regulatory compliance? So you can really see that IT has a key role to play here, and in particular, in the way that data moves around the organization. So what is the solution to addressing this problem from the ZOS platform out to all the distributed platforms that may be within your IT organization? How can we raise the lowest common denominator from the free FTP packages we've seen to the kind of quality of service we'd expect, we certainly expect from the ZOS platform, but that we want to see throughout our entire enterprise? Let's move on to slide 10 and look at the benefits of a managed file transfer solution from IBM. What we're really talking about here is a backbone for moving all of the data across your enterprise, and in particular, files and messages. How can we address the problems that we saw earlier by reducing the cost and time it takes to build solutions for moving data and maintain them? For example, how can we eliminate the need to write code? How can we move from a recreate, rebuild, reinvent the wheel kind of solution to simply configuring what you have and extending what you have? And how can we consolidate all the efforts and the operations teams to administering and running the data movement part of your IT infrastructure? At the same time, how can we have the kind of quality of service that we're familiar with on the SystemZ platform out to these other environments? How can we have the high security, reliable, resilient, auditable movement of data from end to end? And at the same time, in addressing all these problems, how can we start to move those IT systems onto the road towards SOA? How can we get towards this shared IT infrastructure that can be reused, that can be very flexible? Because ultimately, we want to make sure that our IT investments are not only fixing immediate problems, but laying a good foundation for the future. If we move on to slide 11, it introduces the managed file transfer solution from IBM. And really at the heart of this solution is the combination of two market-leading technologies. WebSphere MQ, providing a reliable backbone for moving data of any kind between IT systems. It's a market leader for messaging. It's proven itself in the market for well over 13 years. And it's combined in the IBM solution with a product called PM for Data, which specializes MQ for files, for file data, and provides a managed file transfer layer that exploits MQ and enables you to move and control and monitor data transfers from end to end. Now, these products run on the ZOS platform natively, exploiting the ZOS characteristics, but also they run on a plethora of distributed platforms. And as you may be aware, WebSphere MQ runs on over 80 platform configurations. So that's virtually any commercial IT system that you need to connect to. And this quality of service extends right out to all of those platforms. So let's look a bit closer at the MQ layer in this solution on slide 12. What we're really looking at doing here is providing a messaging backbone that is reliable, that is trusted, that is proven, that connects with all the other IT systems that you need to connect with. And that's really what Web Assure MQ has been providing for many years. There is patented technology in there that enables data transfers to be transactional in nature, reliable in nature, and provides guaranteed data delivery. And that's really any kind of data, from XML data to application data, to binary data, to video, pictures, images, any kind of data that you want to move, MQ is designed for that. It certainly has market leadership in the messaging opportunity, and we have over 10,000 customers worldwide in a range of different industries using this technology to move massive amounts and high values of data every single day. MQ is also integrated in the sense that it plumbs into the ESB or Enterprise Service Bus technologies that IBM has that really provides a foundation for SOA and business process management. So not only can this transport layer help address the problem of how to move data around your organization, it can also lay the first step to SOA and get you on the road to those sorts of solutions. Let's now focus on the PM for Data part on slide 13. So PM for Data sits upon MQ. It, in fact, prereqs the MQ technology, and it provides a zero-code way of defining file transfers. So using a configuration tooling environment we'll look at very briefly later on in the presentation, you can define transfers of data between IT systems, both on the ZOS platform, Linux for SystemZ, and all the other platforms. That enables you to define data movement in a very flexible, powerful way without the need to write any code. Also, it has this very powerful exit feature. And what this enables you to do, as we'll see later, is to be able to define application logic that's run either before or after a file arrives at its end destination. Most importantly, PM for Data provides this administration layer, which we'll look at, that enables you to track the movement of data from end to end. So from every single IT system that data moves to, and produce a very comprehensive report that can be used to prepare for audits. And in terms of its administration, like WebStore MQ, it has centralized management and administration. But in particular, with PM for Data, you're looking at administering the movement of file data. Underneath that, MQ provides a messaging traffic that can break these large files down and move them very efficiently, optimizing your network resources. So let's look at some of the security aspects of this solution on slide 14. As we touched on earlier, security is really the number one concern of many in the IT department today. I looked at some of the problems with the lowest common denominator of free FTP technologies that may be in use across your distributed environments. With the PM for Data and WebStore MQ solution on ZOS, leveraging industry standards like secure sockets layer security and 128-bit encryption, MQ also has common criteria certification, so it's able to provide a very trusted, proven level of security in the way that it moves data. And in addition, MQ's extended security edition also augments MQ with even more powerful security features. So that rather than just securing the data in transit, you can actually secure the connection at the application layer in your solution. Let's look at the data transfer characteristics of this solution on slide 15. PM for Data provides the ability with MQ to move files in a very asynchronous fashion. And as we saw earlier, often FTP applications, both sender and receiver, must be available simultaneously. With this solution, there's no need. You can send a file from an application. Even if the receiving application is not available, that's still possible. The managed file transfer layer will hold that file, move the file to the target machine, and then make it available as soon as the application is ready. And the sort of thing that is often useful in this scenario is triggering, where the application may be even started or triggered to process files as they come through. We looked earlier at the strong security. With PM for Data, you're able to digitally sign messages and files as they're sent and provide the kind of auditing needed for things like non-repudiation. In terms of data integrity, because we're leveraging MQ's reliable traffic and reliable transport layer, you can have assured delivery of files, so no chance of partial files or duplicate files arriving at the application. And so there's no need to build that kind of checking logic into each application within your environment. The managed file transfer layer takes care of that requirement. In terms of transactionality, files can be moved in a very transactional manner. So if there's a transaction, perhaps on the ZOS platform, that's involved in the movement of a file to another machine in a distributed environment, this solution provides a mechanism for doing that. And later on, we'll look at some of the performance statistics for the PM4 Data and MQ solution. And in a sense, the performance results we've seen are somewhat counterintuitive. The MQ layer is very much optimized for the parallel movement of large amounts of data. And even when combined with PM4 Data, it still compares very favorably with standard FTP technologies. So let's move on to slide 16 and see what kinds of data sources can be integrated with this solution. And obviously, files can be moved with this solution, but in addition to that, PM4 Data also provides the ability to connect into database systems and, of course, underlying messaging systems, in particular MQ, but even GMS providers. And each of these data sources can provide a connection to this messaging transport layer. So that if you want to, say, extract a file from a directory on a machine and have that file become a database update or a message on a messaging backbone, any of that is possible, the ability to mix those different kinds of data together. And we move on to slide 17, we can see this in a bit more detail. So PM4 Data has the ability to, say, for example, turn a file into a message or a message into a database record and back again. All of the conversions that would be required to do that are automatically provided within the PM4 Data layer. There's no need to build any of that by hand. At the same time, the different kinds of data and the different directory structures between operating systems are automatically catered for. There's no need to build the kind of primitive translation function that will be needed to integrate these different platforms together. There are specific values that can be set for platforms like ZOS and iSeries. And as a result, on slide 18, you can see, as we said earlier, this solution really provides end-to-end data transfer across virtually any commercial IT system. So if the files are moving from, say, Windows machines to many of the different Unix and Linux flavors and to SystemZ platforms and iSeries platforms, all these kinds of data can be accommodated and moved reliably and securely across this file transfer layer. Let's take a little bit of a closer look at the PM4 Data technology itself and see how we can initiate and control file transfers. And we can compare this as we go to writing this by hand and using FTP technology. So slide 19 shows how easy it is and the different ways you can initiate a data transfer. So for example, you can have, for example, triggers set up so that when a new file or a file is updated on a directory, this triggers a transfer. Alternatively, you might want to trigger a transfer when a database is updated, when a new record appears, or even from the messaging layer, when a new message arrives, a message is deleted. Any of these kind of events can trigger the movement of a file. And of course, creating a data transfer request and submitting that to the managed file transfer layer clearly also initiate data transfer. And the important thing here is that the data transfers requests can be sent remotely from any platform on this network and enable other machines, remote machines, to participate in the movement of a file. So this is a very powerful mechanism for moving data between these IT systems. Let's look a little bit more about how we can build these kind of data transfers. Slide 20 shows a screenshot of a file transfer request. And this can be built remotely. It can be built using the graphical user interface you see here, but also it can be built programmatically. So a computer program can generate one of these and submit it to the file transfer network. And these requests are formatted in XML, and of course that XML could be created by an application, or the tool itself generates the XML, which could be used and submitted at some later stage. But as you can see, the data transfer request can be sent remotely to have its effect on other machines and other applications far away from where the data request is originally sent. Slide 21 shows many of the configuration options available within the data transfer request. And really, there are so many different functions that it's not possible to cover in just a simple presentation. But as you can see, there are many different aspects of the transfer that can be configured and changed. And the PM for Data interface provides a very extensible environment where you can extend the nature of these transfer requests. Moving on to slide 22, you can see in more detail a request. The transfer types can be changed to binary or text. And there's the ability to choose whether or not you want to replace, append, or overwrite existing files. And so you can really build up a very powerful set of rules that determine exactly what happens to your transfers, when they occur, what happens to files when they arrive, what happens if directories are not available when the file is sent, do you want to create the transfers, do you want to delete the file once it's been sent, or do some other piece of work to it. So there are many ways to customize the file transfer according to your requirements. Slide 23 shows just a sampling of how we can monitor data transfers. And the important thing here is wanting to be able to get a comprehensive view of the file data as it moves from end to end across the system. So this isn't just looking at a file moving between two connected machines. This may be looking at a file that's passing through a number of different machines in between the source and target for that file ultimately. Being able to see where that file has gone at each step and how far it's progressed towards its ultimate destination. PM for Data provides a very comprehensive range of statistics that can be used to create reports to audit and show progress in the health of the file transfer solution and the underlying applications. Slide 24 is a screenshot just showing in more detail the graphical format in which the audit trail of file transfers can be seen. And as you can see here, there is a listing of all the different applications that have received or been involved in transferring a particular file. This can show you very easily whether the file has been sent or received, whether there any problems were involved in the movement of that file, the time that the machines received the file and moved the file, and all of the control data that's been sent back to the control center of the product to make that available to the monitoring applications. Of course, all that data can be loaded into databases and viewed in a range of different ways, but the graphical tooling itself provides a very powerful way of drilling into the audit trail for file transfers. And moving on to slide 25, you can see a simple tool that enables you to resolve file transfer problems without having to actually resend the entire file. And in this scenario, a file has been transferred to a machine where the target directory doesn't exist. PM for Data can normally create directories, but it has not been configured that way. So in this case, an administrator can go in, see the problem, create the target directory, or change the configuration of PM for Data. By resending the transfer request, the actual file data doesn't have to be removed. It's already at the target machine, but it is just simply released, and that rule is processed as expected. That's a very powerful way of solving problems without the overhead of having to move all the files again. On the next slide, slide 26, I mentioned performance earlier, and this just shows some of the comparisons between moving large files in particular over some of the built-in distributed FTP technologies and compares it with the PM for Data and MQ approach. And as you can see, it compares very favorably indeed with many of the distributed FTP technologies. And this is really because of its ability to scale and provide a very broad pipeline for moving massive amounts of data. So on slide 27, you can see some of the benefits of the IBM's managed file transfer solution. We looked at the reliability and the security, the ability to integrate many different data sources, the range of distributed and systems E platforms supported, and the degree of control you get from every aspect of the data transfer. We looked at how we can use a graphical interface to eliminate the need to write code to determine where files move. We've also looked at how you can get end-to-end visibility of where the transfers have moved across every single machine to give you that end-to-end auditability. We've just touched on some of the resilience features that enable you to solve problems within the network without having to resend files, and also touched upon the performance characteristics of this solution. Slide 28 reiterates the role that this solution can play in helping customers get on the road to SOA, to really get onto a service-oriented architecture that is composed of flexible, reusable components. And that's really an important thing to bear in mind as IT departments invest in FTP technology. It's good to ask yourself the question, is this helping you address more pervasive IT problems within your infrastructure? And is it really helping you get on the road to SOA, or is it a redundant investment in that service-oriented world? Slide 29 positions IBM's Managed File Transfer solution within the SOA reference architecture. And really, this ability to move files and move data is a core part of the transport layer within an enterprise service bus. Slide 30 provides an example of a European retailer, and they had a requirement to replace the homegrown solutions they'd built based on distributed FTP technology. And they wanted to provide a very reliable, secure way of connecting those FTP systems into their core systems E applications at head office. They wanted to try and reduce the time it took to move the file data and eliminate the custom coding. So by using WebSTREMQ and PM for Data, they were able to very effectively move that file data across the network and get the updates in a very timely fashion. In the next chart, slide 31, this is an example of an Australian financial markets company who are integrating many of the servers that they had with homegrown free FTP-based technology. They really needed, as a financial company, a way to audit the transfer of their files from end to end. And also, they needed to be able to increase the return on investment of their IT projects and reduce the amount of custom coding. As you can see, the benefits of using MQ and PM for Data, they were able to reduce their integration costs, and they were able to increase the auditability of their data movements. At the same time, by combining the solution with WebSphere Message Broker, they were really laying the foundation for an enterprise service bus that got them started on the road to SOA. So on slide 32, what are the next steps that you might want to take? Well, we looked earlier in the presentation that the investigation you might want to conduct in looking at the IT infrastructure across your organization to talk to different members of IT departments within your enterprise and just see how much free FTP and homegrown integration solutions there really are. Consider how the lowest common denominator of FTP technology affects the end-to-end reliability and security of that file data. And consider whether that puts you in a good position or not to meet regulatory compliance obligations and whether it's a good use of your IT resources to continue maintaining those kind of solutions. You might want to consider the opportunity cost of working to build low-level transport capabilities into your infrastructure and whether that effort will be better spent focused on higher value solutions like your enterprise service bus or your business process management layer. And lastly, are these FTP-based solutions providing you with an inhibitor to deploying SOA? The URL listed at the bottom of this chart points you to an analyst report that may give you some more ideas about where you can look to reduce the risks and save costs of doing integration. In addition, you might also want to approach your IBM representative or business partner and ask them about WebSphere MQ and PM for Data. So I'd like to thank you for joining this webcast today. Now I'd like to hand back to the operator.
Thank you, Ben. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice, and please listen to all options before making your decision. Our first question, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, please press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. And we'll pause for a moment to allow everyone a chance to signal. Next question, please rate the level of technical information presented in this teleconference. If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than you needed to hear, press star 3. And we'll be right back with our next question. And our third question, how do you mostly transfer files today? If in-house developed solution using sockets, press star 1. If in-house developed solution using FTP, you press star 2. If free FTP technologies, press star 3. If managed file transfer products based on FTP, press star 4. If IBM WebSphere MQ and PM4 data, press star 5. And we'll pause for another moment. And our last question. We hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, please press star 1. If no, press star 2. And we'll be right back to take your questions. That does conclude our survey. Thank you all very much for participating. Now let's move to your questions. To ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. If you're joining us with a phone that has a mute function, please make sure that mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, it is star 1 on your touchtone telephone if you'd like to ask a question today. And at this time, I'll turn the call back over to our speakers while we wait for questions.
Thank you very much.
And we do have a question from Pete Ajawa, SuperValue.
It's more of a comment than a question. The presentation today, I rated it low because it didn't seem the handout that you guys provided off the web even followed anywhere near what the presenter was talking about. Was there an issue with that, or am I the only one that had that problem?
No, this is Ben Manhai. I'd just like to apologize to all those, including yourself, that were listening and somewhat confused by the matching between the presentation and the presentation I thought I was using. In fact, the error was mine. The wrong set of charts was submitted at the last hurdle, and we noticed about halfway through and did the best we could to make sure people were aware that the charts were in fact the slightly wrong deck. So my apologies once again. I can appreciate that that would have made it quite confusing. The slides are now available, I hope, and you'll be able to see those, I think, later on today. If you wish, there was a replay of this call. It may make a lot more sense either looking through the charts yourself afterwards or perhaps re-listening, if you wish, using the actual slides that were intended. But once again, I can appreciate that would have support the enjoyment and the ability to follow that call. So I do apologize.
And again, that is star 1 if you'd like to ask a question today. And if you find that your question has been asked and answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound symbol. Again, that's star 1 to ask a question. We'll hear from Jim Anderson from Citi.
I have some questions. You mentioned that it optimizes transmission and it's faster than FTP. And I was curious how you optimize, and also mentioned massive file support as 10 gig, but we see a lot of transmissions that are in the 100 to 200 gig size, and I was just curious if it can handle that.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. So what I was really showing there were some illustrative examples of some performance work that we have done. Really because of the way that the combination of PM for Data and MQ works, theoretically there's no limit on the size of the file. What PM for Data is doing is taking a file, breaking it down into smaller components, smaller messages, and using MQ to move those messages. At the other side, the messages are recombined to reform the file. Obviously, MQ as a transport enables us to ensure that, that the file data can be pieced back together appropriately so that you get the whole file at the other end. And all of this happens without the developer seeing that process or having to be involved in that process. But the audit trail that they have of all the different components of the file moving across the network is pieced back together by PM for Data. So theoretically, you can move any size of file. Under the covers, of course, PM for Data and MQ are breaking it down into smaller chunks, moving them across the network. And of course, one of the key ways we've found to optimize this solution is to determine the right chunking or the right bytes to take out of the whole file for each MQ message. And it depends a lot on your MQ configuration, the kind of network that you're running, as to what the right level is. And through PM for Data, through its interface, you can configure the right size of those message components that are broken down. MQ itself supports messages up to 100 megabytes in size. So if it's anything above that, then PM for Data will definitely slice the file into smaller pieces. But it always recombines them when all those pieces arrive at the other side.
Excuse me, Ben, may I have a go at this question? It's Jim McNair.
Yeah, sure, Jim. Thanks.
You asked two different questions. I'll give you 3 points. First, PM for Data, we usually advertise as about twice the speed of FTP. The reason is that it's using MQ to transfer the data, so it's really the fact that MQ channels are more efficient than FTP. What they're really more efficient as is they send a lot more data before requiring an acknowledgement back. FTP basically sends some data, gets an ACK back. It's subject, therefore, to network latency, whereas PM for Data using MQ channels will send a lot more data before we need an acknowledgement back, and we can tune it so that we can continually send data regardless of the latency in the network. I've seen latencies as high as 300 to 500 milliseconds where we can drive whatever the bandwidth of the network is. So the number that I typically cite and have on a chart shows a 4.5 gigabyte file that took 4 minutes with FTP and took a minute and a half with PM for Data. But your numbers will vary. If you're on the same LAN segment, a local transfer, FTP will be much closer to PM for Data. Whereas the more the latency, the further away you're going, the more network hops you're going, usually the more PM for Data will win. Secondly, as far as the maximum size of the file, the default in PM for Data is a 62K message, so it'll break the file up into 62K chunks. That is a parameter you can change to go up to 4 megabytes per message. Typically, a queue manager will have a limit of the maximum number of messages in a single unit of work. I've seen that often in the range of 4,000 to 5,000. So if you multiply the message size, the amount of data in a file, times the queue manager setting of a maximum unit of work, because we send the file as a unit of work, you will find that that is typically going to be a limit. You can change that limit in the queue manager. You can increase it. There's no real arbitrary limit. So if you need to, you can increase that. I should add that we use non-persistent messages for data. So there, our control message is persistent, our data messages are not, so we do not impact the MQ log. The final point you had, I should add that PM for Data supports compression, and it compresses each individual data message. So if your file will compress, PM for Data can have a major advantage because it's sending less bytes. So, therefore, that would be additive to any inherent performance advantage it has. I hope that answered the question.
Final reminder that star one, if you'd like to ask a question today, we'll move on to Safeway's Alan Griffin.
Good morning. You mentioned the ability to batch long-running transfers at a lower level and prioritize certain transfers. And I'd like more information on that because I have not ever gotten that to work properly.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think what we're talking about here really is the ability to say, you know, if I'm sending a lot of data through a particular FTP connection that's been set up, you know, the only way I can send another message from that same FTP client is to start another connection.
I'm not an FTP shop. I'm a PM for Data shop.
Right. Okay. I take the point. So I don't know, Jim. Do you want to talk about this how to get that running?
Hi, Jim. How you doing?
Hi, Alan. What Ben was referring to is a parameter in a file transfer where you can set the MQ priority of the messages.
And I've done that, and it does not. Yeah. But so I guess I'll get back with Chuck on that.
Yeah, please send me a message offline because that's supposed to work. And if it's not setting the MQ priority or if MQ is not honoring the priority, that is a bug in either PM for data or MQ.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We have a question from Warren Jernigan, Department of Interior.
Yes, you mentioned basically the FTP scenario. So what on the distant end or customer side needs to be present for this to actually succeed? Do they need to have WebSphere or any of those type of solutions, or is it just, hey, there's a sunbox out there and we can communicate with it and dump right to it?
Well, to begin with, we're using a different sort of technology to FTP. So firstly, what you couldn't use on that client end is an FTP client. But the key way of doing it, the main way of doing it, is we have MQ client technology, it's MQ client code, which is freely available. It can be downloaded from the web that provides the MQ client channels. And then on top of that, we run the PM for data client, which exploits the MQ client mechanism to send files from client machines into the sort of data movement backbone. There has been some work done recently on what we've called, in inverted commas, a zero client technology, which is by packaging some of that client code into a sort of web interface where from a web browser you can install the Java componentry, I think as an applet, and use that as a mechanism for feeding files onto the backbone. But as we also saw, that client technology can be plumbed into databases, and also, the standard MQ messages can form inputs to files or can be output as files from this mechanism. I don't know, Jim, if you have any more details on the web interface for PM for data.
No, what we've experimented with is what we call a zero footprint client, which you don't have to install, and it basically uses the MQ client channel protocol directly out of a Java applet.
And that's available for Sun, Linux, across the board, or is it to specific operating systems?
I wasn't sure that was actually part of the product. That's why I'm being a little loose on that.
It's okay.
Yeah, but certainly for the MQ piece. Sorry.
Yeah, I want you to get back to me offline, and I'll get a clear answer for you.
Okay.
Yeah, and in terms of the MQ and PM for data clients, the standard mechanisms, they're available on a whole range of platforms, from the whole gamut from Sun to all the other platforms you mentioned, the AX platforms, the HPUX, a broad range of environments.
The only notable platform that an MQ client's not available on is ZOS mainframes. You only have queue managers on those platforms.
Okay.
Here, there are no further questions at this time. Mr. Mann, I'll turn the call back over to you for any additional closing remarks.
That's great. Thank you very much. I'd just like to thank Jim McNair for joining us from the Worldwide Technical Sales team. And just like to thank you all for joining. Once again, I apologize for the misunderstanding with the charts, and I hope that hasn't detracted too much from your enjoyment of the presentation and the information you've got from it. I encourage you to look back at the website. We will have the correct materials available very shortly for you to download and view in your own time. And if you want to reach out and contact me at a later point, that would be great. I'm at benmann@uk.ibm.com. Once again, thanks for joining, and take care. Bye-bye.
Again, thank you for joining us today. That does conclude the presentation. Have a great afternoon.